This is an iHeart podcast.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
The Jesse Kelly Show. Let's have some fun. On a Friday, it's Ask Dr. Jesse Friday, and World War III is kicking off. I'm kidding. I don't think that's what it's going to be. But yes, I will give you my thoughts on all the Israel, Iran, what have we done? I'll give you my thoughts briefly at the beginning of the show, but don't think for a moment that's going to dominate the entire show because it's Ask Dr. Jesse Friday. Yeah, we'll touch on the riots a little bit. We'll touch on this article about Democrats trying to reclaim the American flag. But we have so much more we have to talk about tonight because your questions are wonderful and they're all over the place. There are history questions, political questions. Should we be afraid of these protests they're calling for tomorrow? Should we back off of the parade? Should we? There's so much to get to tonight on the Jesse Kelly Show, and we will get to all that in just a moment. Before we get to that, I want to let you know, in case you did not listen last night, if you're a history fan and you didn't listen last night I did the Alexander the Great Siege of Tyre history. Judging by the 10,000 emails we got, you enjoyed it. I'm glad you enjoyed it. You can go download it for free if you missed it. It's podcasted. iHeart, Spotify, iTunes, very simple. There's no charge or anything like that. Go download it. Hour two. I started in hour two, but it went into hour three last night. Go enjoy some history if that's your thing. But for now, let's discuss very briefly, like I said, what happened last night. Right about the time we were signing off, Israel kicked off an operation inside Iran. Now, I realize a lot of this stuff is basic, but let's go to some basics because some people are busy, right? People have different levels of knowledge about things because people have lives. You have a life, you have a job, you have, you know, things. So Iran is a place ruled by Islamist fundamentalists. You know that. Everyone knows that by now. That's kind of our fault, courtesy of Jimmy Carter. We are the ones who bounced the last leadership, and now we have these dirt balls. Because that's what they do, and because they do have resources, I don't know that I'd call it a wealthy country, but it's not a poor country, they have used those resources for jihadi activities throughout the world, and really specifically in the Middle East. They hate Israel, of course. They hate us, of course. They have a long documented history of sponsoring, training. They'll provide weapons to Hezbollah, Hamas. You remember in Iraq when it got really bad? When I tell people I was in the Iraq invasion, because people don't really remember the timeline, people will go, whoa, you know, because I was there for the start of it, the whole invasion and everything. And don't get me wrong, it wasn't exactly a rip-roaring good time, and it was violent and all those things, but it was actually the guys who came after I left. They had it way worse. Why? We invaded, we took out Saddam, we pacified the place, and then Iran started funding terrorists to come across the border, mainly from Syria, but from other places too, with IED training, with IED equipment, and all those young men and women we lost in Iraq or got maimed in Iraq. And maybe you're listening right now. Maybe you're one of those people, and I respect you. I love you. Thank you for what you did. Anyway, That came after I left. The people who came after me had it worse over there than I ever did. And a lot of that was courtesy of Iran. Now, as far as Israel goes, Israel, everyone understands this by now, small country, 8 million people surrounded by other countries who want them eliminated. And that has prompted Israel from its very beginning. Remember, Israel, they reconquered that area. They had left. They had been scattered. They conquered it again. Again, we don't have to do this it was a negotiation. Stop. They conquered it. We conquered America. It's fine to talk about conquest. They reconquered it. And since then, everyone around them, all the Muslim countries around them, or most of the Muslim countries around them, have tried to eradicate them. And they, remember, they were founded. They really, really got their footing post-WW2. I realize a lot of that stuff was happening beforehand, but post-World War II, post-Holocaust, Jews from around the world decided, you know, someone just exterminated 6 million of us. We are going to have a longer fangs, if you will, with this new country. And so Israel's foreign policy from its founding all the way to right now has been aggressive, proactive, and aggressive. Israel does not believe in this, frankly, childish notion of you only hit once you've been hit. You never hit first. That's something your mom told you because she doesn't understand how the world actually works. If you believe somebody means to do you harm, you hit first and you hit hard, because whoever hits first and hard, oftentimes they win. If you would like a window into Israel's foreign policy, I'll point out a book. Thank you, Chris, for bringing that up. I'll point out a book that I have read before. I'm warning you, it's very long, very detailed. It'll take you many sittings to finish the thing, but it's called Rise and Kill First. That's the name of the book, and they got that title. They basically ripped it off of Israel's foreign policy. That's what they believe. They are not going to sit around and wait. They will kill you. You will read about things in that book like a Syrian general. He was spouting off about all the Jews he was getting ready to kill, all the things he was getting ready to do to Israel. Israel sent over some super stud commandos. They scuba dived into the harbor. The guy had a mansion by the harbor. He was having a party. He was standing, I think it was his second floor, but he was standing on a balcony overlooking the harbor. The commandos come up above the water, barely above the water, sniper rifle, pop, your head's gone, back down under the water and gone. That's how Israel handles their foreign policy. That's what they believe in all the way. They will not wait. If they think you mean them harm, they will go after you, period. Combine that with two things. One, Mossad, Israel's intelligence service, is top-notch. The operations they pull off are unbelievable. They are unbelievably complicated, sophisticated, an unreal amount of thinking and planning and resources have to go into this. Israel spends big money on its intelligence service, and they are really, really, really good. Combine that with this little tidbit. They're not only majorly talented, they're majorly embarrassed at this point in time, and that is a dangerous combination when you have someone capable and that someone feels humiliated. Israel's intelligence apparatus feels humiliated by October 7th. They have been blasted over there in Israel for missing that and allowing 1,000 Israelis to be murdered. And so you have this uber-talented, deadly organization that is uniquely motivated to go out and hurt somebody because they missed something big. So you have that combined with us and our aid and our intelligence. Anybody who's read books on it or has friends in the intelligence arena or special operations arena or anything like that, everybody knows we work with the Israelis all the time. Our CIA works with Mossad. Our special operations work with Mossad. Our special operations work with their special operations forces. All the time, especially when it is some sort of a jihadi attack in that area where they are very good and we are very good, we work together all the time. Okay, so that's kind of the background of the situation. Now, as for Iran itself, Trump has been trying to avoid this thing turning into a war. Remember, about 61 days ago, Donald Trump came out and said, you've got 60 days. We're going to negotiate for 60 days. Now, we did a talk last night on Alexander the Great. And I'm not going to do that whole talk again or anything like that at all. But I am going to focus on one tiny aspect of that to kind of explain what can happen to a country. It can happen to ours. It happened to Iran. I'm going to do a little history comparison in just a moment. Before I do that history comparison, I want to make sure you are getting ready for what could be something. Could be a big something. Remember, Iran was doing military drills with China and Russia. We don't know where this thing's going to go. Hopefully nowhere. I'm not saying it's going to go huge. I don't know that. I mean, you have Mike Flynn saying things like
this. War is going to go on in the Middle East for at least another 2 weeks. You're going to see a level of devastation that we have not seen probably historically in many people's lives, probably since World War II. And this is regime change.
Do you have gold as part of your retirement account? Do you know what this could do to the markets, to your 401k? Have you gotten a hold of Gold Co? Even if you don't do anything, at least get a free copy of their 2025 gold and silver kit. At least do some reading. That's all I'm asking. At least do some reading on it. Go get one. 855-817-GOLD. It's a free kit. Or you can go to jessielikesgold.com. Get one from there. At least read up on it. Me personally, I'd be making sure right about now that my retirement was safe. All right. A little more on this with a little more history. Next.
You're listening to The Oracle.
You're going to love this one. It's a scream, baby.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is The Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful, a fantastic Friday, an Ask Dr. Jesse Friday. And I promise you, I'm going to get to those questions here in a few. We're just clearing up a few things on the Iran-Israel thing. Just I kind of laid out a little bit of the background of it as far as Iran goes. Because you already know the story. You've already heard it all day. You probably followed it all night long. Israel, a series of amazingly precise airstrikes, which let me go ahead and pause and explain this. Whenever you see precision airstrikes like that, that are that precise, not talking about carpet bombing stuff, but that precise, when you're dropping missiles into specific apartments in an apartment building, that is not necessarily a military win. That's an intelligence win. You have unbelievable amounts of intelligence, the kind of intelligence that makes your enemy scared to death. Because when you do that, when you take out that many people in one night at virtually the same time, they feel like you know everything. You know everything, where everyone is. It's an unbelievable intelligence win. Anyway, so how did we get here? Remember the Alexander the Great Thebes talk we had very briefly? Because I talked a little Alexander the Great last night. And Alexander the Great shows up outside of Thebes. He's mad. Thebes is rebelling. He ends up wiping out the city, laying siege to it, enslaves everybody, and burns the whole city to the ground. You got all that. But there were different factions inside of Thebes. We simplify everything, especially historically, because it's easier to just point out Thebes hated Alexander the Great. Thebes rebelled. Thebes didn't want to give in. So Thebes got wiped out. Very simple. It was not that simple at all. There were arguments, debates, competing factions inside of Thebes. And during this moment, this applies to us. It applies to every country at all times. During this moment, it's really important that the correct faction ends up winning the argument. There were all kinds of people inside of Thebes saying, no, this is Alexander the freaking Great. Look at his army. We don't even have the people for this. This is suicide. Negotiate. Surrender. Give him something or we're all going to die. There were all kinds of people, powerful people in Thebes saying, no, what are we doing? Stop. But it's whoever holds the most power at the time who makes the critical decisions that can be your life or your death. And those people inside of Thebes wanted to rebel. They hated Alexander, they hated his father, and they wanted to fight it out. They ended up being the voice that won. 30,000 Thebans ended up in chains. In Iran, this happens a lot in these Islamist fundamentalist countries. There are all kinds of Iranians who are freedom-loving, actually Western-loving people. There are even people in the Iranian government who believe in negotiating with America. Because remember, like we've talked about before, Trump's foreign policy generally works because Trump looks at everything as a business deal. Trump has been over there. Trump has been negotiating with these people, and essentially it was all about money. Hey, why don't we do a deal? We'll trade with you. He even told them, we'll do trade. You'll have more money. We'll have more money. Why don't we just do a deal? We don't have to fight. Let's do a deal. You know Trump, he loves to do a deal. There were people inside of Iran's government who, A, wanted to do a deal, and B, knew that militarily, while they do definitely have some abilities, they can't stop us in Israel. They can't. Even if we don't ever get hands-on with it, we send Israel all of this weaponry and Israel's top-notch intelligence work with our top-notch intelligence so we know everything with the weapons to hurt them, that reasonable people inside of Iran were trying to do a deal. But Trump, he kept running into these hardliner types. And they were and are the most powerful voices.
And then he went on to say this. Iran should have...
Sorry, this is Dana Bash, CNN.
And then he went on to say this. Iran should have listened to me when I said, you know, I gave them... I don't know if you know this, but I gave them a 60-day warning. And today is day 61. And then he said, they, meaning Iran, should now come to the table to make a deal before it's too late. And then he said something really noteworthy. He said, the people I was dealing with are dead, the hardliners, to which I just wanted to underscore. So what you're saying is Israel has now killed the people who you were dealing with. And he said very sarcastically, they didn't die of the flu. They didn't die of COVID.
What may be happening here is Israel takes out the people inside of Iran who were preventing a deal, and once those voices are gone, there's a chance negotiations will now continue because the others are afraid and because the hardliners who were screwing it all up are now dead because they all ate missiles last night. That could be going on. We don't know. I mean, imagine if Alexander the Great... he was dealing with 20 bad guys in Thebes instead of wiping out the city. What if he just sent assassins in, killed all 20 of the guys? Oh, look, Thebes wants to do a deal now. Look at how that worked out. You see, we're moving off of this. I don't have anything else to say about it because we can't do anything now but sit and watch and wait. And it is what it is. You want to learn more about this kind of history? Greek history? American history, the history of the Christian church, the fall of the Roman Republic, the Constitution, Hillsdale College will teach you at no cost. If you go to hillsdale.edu/Jesse, you can enroll. There's no cost. More than 40 online courses for free. I have this long sports tournament I have to go to tomorrow. I'm not going to go into the details of it. I have already gotten myself logged in with my headphones, ready to go. Since I'm going to be sitting there for hours, it's the weekend, why not learn something? Especially because the classes are actually interesting. And this is from Me, bad student Jesse. Maybe I would have stayed in college if I'd gone to Hillsdale, although I could never get in. You want some of these free courses? Hillsdale.edu/Jesse. We'll be back.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Returns next.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful, wonderful Friday. And look, my final word on this stuff, because listen, I need to explain something to you. I don't do, as you know, I don't do mass shooting radio. I don't do plane crash radio. We get this stuff all the time. There'll be, you know, a plane crash somewhere or something like that. And people will be, you know, the different people from different parts of radio. Well, are you going to talk about it? Why aren't you talking about it? I don't do that. I don't do breaking news. I'm not a journalist. I want to let facts come in. If you think we're going to do 3 hours of following every internet video of missiles landing on Tel Aviv, which obviously they did earlier today and all this stuff, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. We will wait for facts to come in, analyze them again on Monday. I am not doing live breaking war talk. If that's what you're interested in, sayonara for the night, because I don't do it. I'll never do it. I don't pounce on the latest mass shooting and no, it's not going to happen here. So there, that is done. Let us move on. We are going into Ask Dr. Jesse Friday. Let's pray the world doesn't go into World War III. We will see where we go from here. Jesse, this dispute with Trump and Musk is the part of Trump that really irritates me, this lady says. They are both acting like 7-year-old brats, and it's disgusting. I expect Trump is an elected official to conduct himself better, not to mention all the extremely important and in some cases dire issues that need his complete focus right now. Okay, so I get what you're saying. And I'm certainly not insulting you at all, because I had the exact same thought as we watch Trump and Elon go in a big fight. But let me explain something. It's not necessarily just about Trump and Elon. It's about all of society, every society on the planet. We human beings, we tend to hold up people who are above us, society. I don't want to say that. It's not exactly what I mean, but people who are in these lofty positions, higher positions than we are in society, we tend to mentally make them more than us, more than what we are. When we see, and this, we do this with professional athletes, that you see this incredible professional athlete, super accomplished, and you know what you think to yourself? You think, wow, he probably really has his life together. He never goes to Taco Bell like I do. He goes to Taco Bell all the freaking time. He never has to worry about this. He doesn't stress about his kids and how they're doing. He has all your stresses, all your strains, all your flaws, all of them. He has something he's really good at that makes him famous and wealthy, but he has all your struggles and all your flaws. We do this with business leaders. We do this with politicians, including president and the richest man in the world. We watched last week as they started throwing monkey poop at each other online, and I had the exact same thought, that this looks childish. This is not helping. This is petty. What are they doing? I had the exact same thought. But the truth is, aren't you petty from time to time? Aren't you? I am. Look, it's not like I'm celebrating that. I don't want to be. I'm petty. I can be petty. I can be in good moods and bad moods.
I can do right. I can do wrong and do both often. Probably a lot more wrong than right. So can Donald Trump. So can Elon Musk. Rising to the office of President of the United States of America doesn't magically wash your flaws away. Becoming the richest man in the world, you know, on his way to Mars and all this other fancy stuff, Elon Musk, it doesn't magically wash your flaws away. You ever gotten mad? Blasted somebody on social media? Maybe even personally? Have you ever done that? Probably. I'm sure I've done it. Even though I don't believe it, I'm sure I've done it. Well, they're the same. They are the same. I have, because of the various dumb things I've found myself doing in my life, I've met so many of these lofty people. Generals and senators and this and that. They're just like you. They're just like me. They may have a certain skill set that has made them wealthy or famous or powerful or all of the above. They, you know, there are certain things. You know what? Make it about me. I'm no better than you. In a lot of ways, I promise you, I'm worse than you. I have the same stresses you have, the same struggles you have. But because I can do a radio show, I'm maybe more famous than you. Maybe I have more money than you now, but I'm not any different. I have a skill set that I didn't give myself, that God gave me, that allows me to do a radio show. But that doesn't mean I don't have your flaws and your stresses and your struggles. The people who rise to high positions are just like you. Maybe a better bank account. Maybe more Instagram followers, more famous. They've got a billboard. You don't have a billboard. But outside of the billboard, at night, when they pull in the driveway and they walk in, they have the same fights with their wives and their husbands, the same stresses with their kids, the same jealousy, the same bitterness, the same pettiness, the same that they're just like you. Human beings are human beings, no matter what their bank account looks like. That's the best explanation I can offer. They're human. Humans who screwed up. And they knew they screwed up. Elon Musk even came out already and said, I wish I hadn't gotten so personal. It was too personal. I wish I hadn't have done that. So, again, just like you. When you spout off, you ever get in a fight? Girlfriend, boyfriend, wife, husband, ever get in a fight? Ever say something in your anger you kind of wish you hadn't? That's a fun apology, isn't it? Not that it's ever happened to me, but that's a real fun apology. Hey, I shouldn't have said that. I was mad. Well, guess what? Elon Musk is the exact same. Ran his mouth, said a bunch of personal stuff he shouldn't have said. Now you kind of have to do the, I'm sorry, so sorry. That you kind of have to do that thing. Chris, what is with your hair today? There is this big lock of hair that's just like pointing out to the side, you dirty hippie. Maybe it's time for a haircut. Corey, would you address what we're seeing here? I'm sorry. I'm finding it distracting. It's hard to do the show when you are so unkempt. Listen, it's on the left side of your head. How can you not feel it? Corey, would you point it out to him? Maybe get a mirror or something like that. Maybe go to Cost Cutters. We all know you're not going to go to a legitimate barber. Go to Cost Cutters or something. There's someone who will give you a $12 haircut. But whatever that is, it's just got to stop. See, there you go. There you go. There, I'm glad you did something with it. It looked like you had an antenna on the side of your head or something. Anyway, Jesse, my stepdaughter from my previous marriage publicly blasted me on Facebook for being a felon, which I am. She said it hurt mostly because she made it so personal and public. She said, quote, speaking of following the laws and the legal way of doing things, don't you have a felony? And this was all in response to him coming out and saying illegals should all go home. And this guy said, I know you talk a lot about not letting others use your morals against you, but I'm at a loss when people use the whole what would Jesus do line, and I'm not sure how to handle this personal attack. Thanks for all you do. says not to say his name. Okay, let's talk about when people do attack you in public, maybe in front of other people, maybe on social media. What do you do when communists do that? Well, Jesus wouldn't deport anybody line. We'll talk about that. Let's take care of some widows and orphans first. In fact, let's take care of our wounded veterans, catastrophically injured veterans. I know Iraq is all done. I know Afghanistan is all done, and we've all moved on. It's in the past, right? It's not in the past if you don't have your legs. You live with it every single day. When you lost an arm, you live with it every single day. And every day for the rest of your life, you will live with it. So who helps those guys? Tunnel to Towers builds these guys smart homes. Essentially, you can build smart homes built specifically for the injury that allows these guys to be more self-sufficient. They all hate that they need so much help. This takes that away. That's what Tunnel to Towers does. $11 a month is all they've ever asked from us. T2T.org. T2T.org. We'll be back.
He doesn't care if you believe him, but he's right. Jesse Kelly.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful, fantastic Friday. And don't forget, we are live here, and you can email us live, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. So let's get back to this question before we start chopping away at all the other Ask Dr. Jesse greatness you emailed in. So a guy said something about illegals, how they should all go home. Stepdaughter gets on there, blasts him personally, does the what would Jesus do thing, and it hurts. All right, so I'm going to set aside the family dynamic thing because there's just that creates a whole different other host of problems. But I want you to remember this. These communists, these open borders zealot freaks, they have been convinced through enough social media propaganda, the Democrat Party, and most definitely our education system. They have been convinced over a long enough period of time that America is truly an evil empire. They believe it to their bones that this country sucks. And so you have to understand that's where they start from, right? I've used the comparison before to Nazi Germany, meaning you're a German citizen, it's 1938, and you're looking at your government and your country, and you think this is an evil, evil place. That's how the American Democrat thinks about America. I know it's bonkers. It's bonkers. It's nuts. But you have to understand that's the position they start from. They start from that position. And because they start from that position, the mass importation of foreigners, opening up your borders, it's obviously to them, it's the right thing to do. This is an evil country anyway. It was stolen from the saintly Indians and Mexico and everything else. And so, in order to pay for those past sins, we deserve to have the country flooded with foreign barbarians. You know how horrified you get when you see some illegal, Lake and Riley, the Lake and Riley story. Remember how heartbreaking that was? Beautiful, by all accounts, wonderful Christian young lady goes out for a jog, doing something healthy, and some savage Joe Biden brought into the country ended her life brutally. And that made you so mad. Probably mad again now that I brought it up. It didn't make Democrats mad. Even if they personally feel bad for Lake and Riley and her family, the American Democrat is so ingrained with hatred of his country, with hatred of her country, they think American citizens deserve that. I know it's sick and wrong, but that's the position they come from. They are trying to burn it down because they think it's evil. And just like if you were in Nazi Germany, I know it's crazy to make that comparison, but that's what they think. They think they're the good guys in this story, opening up Venezuelan prisons and bringing in a Venezuelan prison gang who rapes and murders Americans. To them, that's the right thing to do. And if those animals come into the country and pillage the country like the barbarians they are, American Democrats feel like this country deserves it because they feel like they're the good guys in this mission, because that is their mission focus. Let's wreck the country. Let's wreck the country. They have set aside all morality that you would recognize, and it gives them complete freedom to go after the ultimate enemy. I've made this comparison before, and Saipan is a great example. World War II in the Pacific, Saipan. Saipan has all kinds of caves. The Japanese, because there were civilians on this island, we hadn't really encountered that yet, the Japanese would grab these civilians on the island, women and children, and they would drag them into the caves because they knew we would hesitate. But we figured out, well, we can't go into the caves. We tried many times, and our guys died every time you tried. It's hard to go into a cave. So we would just throw in satchel charges and blow everybody up, the men, women, and children. How did we justify something like that? Well, because the ultimate greater good is defeating the Japanese, and it doesn't matter if there's some collateral damage. It's sad, but too bad, so sad. We are on a mission. We have to defeat the Japanese. The American Democrat, the American Communist approaches the destruction of America the exact same way, and they approach morality the exact same way. If you have to loot, burn, murder, if you have to insult your stepfather publicly on Facebook in the most personal possible way, everything is permissible when you are going up against the great evil of America. When you are fighting this huge evil empire, you can do anything. You have essentially a morality blank check to do whatever you want, because the ultimate evil is America, after all. And because you are in pursuit of that great cause, the cause of destroying America, well, There are no rules. There are no laws. They don't share your morality. Now, don't let them get to you with that stuff. And as a reminder, don't ever, ever let the communists use your values against you. Because again, I just explained, they don't have values. They're fighting a different place. They're fighting a different war. They don't have your values. They don't really have values you would recognize at all. Because they don't have values, it gives them total freedom to use yours against you. That's why these people will trash the church and Christians every single chance they get. They'll mock it. They'll abort 25 babies. And then the second you bring up deporting illegals, they pull out Jesus as if he's a sword and say, "Are you sure, kind, gentle Jesus would be for deporting illegals? Don't you love Jesus? You said you love Jesus." It's just a tactic they use to disarm you, to put you on the defensive, to get you to back away from stopping their revolution. It's just a tactic. Just let it go. Brush it off, recognize it for what it is, and let it go. Never, ever, ever let the communist use your values against you. If you do, he will win. All right? All right. We have another hour. It's going to be fun. Let's talk about the funding of these groups. Let's talk about the debt. How much of it is waste, fraud, and abuse? And more. Next.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.